Contracts are exchanged for the assignment of a boutique's lease, conditional on the landlord's license. Everything is agreed in correspondence. The landlord's costs are paid, but its only authorized signatory is abroad until the middle of next week, and the buyer has staff arriving on Friday. The seller's director asks the obvious question. Can they complete on Friday and let the license catch up? No, and the reason is worth the whole episode. Completing first is a breach of the lease. It exposes the lease to forfeiture, and it costs the outgoing tenant a statutory release it can never get back. This is license to assign and underlet. Keep that Friday in mind. Here is the root. What a license is and why the landlord wants one. Then the question that decides everything. Is the covenant absolute or qualified? Then the 1988 Act and what a landlord must do once a written application lands. Then privity, release, and guarantees. Then what goes in the license. Then underletting. And last, timing and what Friday would have cost. Start with what the document is. A license to assign or underlet is the landlord's consent in documentary form. It is a contract between landlord, tenant, and usually the incoming party, and it is where the conditions of consent live. Consent and conditions are one package. That is why it runs to several pages instead of one word. Why does the landlord care? Because it is choosing who occupies its building for the rest of the term. It wants rent that will be paid, a tenant that will look after the property, a use that preserves value, and covenants that will actually be performed. The license is the moment it gets to look. Now the question that decides everything else, and candidates skip it. What does the alienation clause actually say? There are three kinds. Absolute. The tenant shall not underlet the whole. That is a prohibition. The tenant has no right to do it at all, the landlord need not entertain a request, and no question of reasonableness arises. Only a variation of the lease can help. Qualified. Not without the landlord's consent, and fully qualified, not without consent. Such consent not to be unreasonably withheld. The distinction between those two hardly matters in practice because Section 19, Subsection 1 of the Landlord and Tenant Act 1927 implies the reasonableness proviso into a qualified covenant anyway. And clauses split. A lease can permit underletting of part with consent not unreasonably withheld, and prohibit underletting of the whole outright. Two limbs, two regimes in one sentence. Read them separately. Where the covenant is qualified, the Landlord and Tenant Act 1988 does the heavy lifting. On a written application for consent, the landlord must, within a reasonable time, give consent, unless it is reasonable not to. It must also serve written notice of its decision, giving reasons for any refusal. Three things follow. First, the burden is on the landlord to prove a refusal was reasonable, not on the tenant to prove it was not. Second, breach of the duty is actionable in damages. Third, and this catches people out, there is no deemed consent. 5 weeks of silence, no reply, no request for anything further, and a buyer ready to complete. Can the tenant simply go ahead? No. Silence may well put the landlord in breach, but it does not authorize the assignment. Assign without the consent the lease requires, and you have a breach of covenant, a forfeiture risk, and something worse that we come back to at the end. The route is to press for a decision, and if none comes, to seek a declaration. And notice what starts the clock. A written application. Telephone calls, however persistent, and raising it at site meetings, however often, engage nothing at all. serve the written application with the supporting information at the outset or the months before, it simply do not count. What makes a refusal reasonable? The purpose of the covenant is to protect the landlord from having its premises used or occupied in an undesirable way, or by an undesirable tenant. International Drilling Fluids is the leading case. So a buyer that plainly cannot meet the rent and the covenants is the clearest reasonable ground there is. A company a year old, no accounts filed, valued at a fraction of a £70,000 rent, offering no deposit and no guarantor, with 11 years still to run. The landlord may refuse. One sound reason is enough. It need not multiply its grounds. Use is a ground too. In Ashworth Fraser, the House of Lords held that a landlord may reasonably refuse on this ground. The test is whether a reasonable landlord could believe the buyer intends to use the premises in breach of the user covenant. And the House rejected the obvious comeback. That the landlord could sue for the breach afterwards is no reason to make it wait for one. Money next, and a trap. The landlord may recover a reasonable sum for the legal and other expenses of dealing with the application. That is Section 19, Subsection 1, Paragraph A of the Landlord and Tenant Act 1927, and most leases say it too. What it may not do, unless the lease expressly provides, is charge a price for the consent itself. Section 144 of the Law of Property Act 1925 supplies a proviso to a covenant against assigning without consent. No fine or sum in the nature of a fine is payable for the consent. So a £950 costs contribution, yes. A £3,000 consent fee, no. And demanding it would itself be an unreasonable withholding. The same idea reaches costs undertakings. A landlord may ask for a reasonable undertaking before it starts work. What it may not do is refuse to progress the application until the tenant submits to a demand far beyond what the work is worth. The courts have held that stalling in that way is itself an unreasonable withholding of consent. Who drafts it? The landlord's solicitor, because the consent and its conditions are the landlord's to give. The tenant is usually paying for that drafting, and it still does not shift. The tenant's solicitor has the other job, to test whether each condition is one the landlord may reasonably impose. Now, privity, and the single most important date in the topic. January 1, 1996. For a lease granted before it, the original tenant contracted to perform the covenants for the whole term, and assigning does not end that. Thursby and Plant. Privity of contract keeps it bound for the rest of the term, and bound for breaches by assignees it has never met and never chose. Nothing in the general law ends it. Only an express release by the landlord will, and the landlord need not give one. In practice, a release is bought with money or with security the landlord values more. Two mitigations do reach old leases. A fixed charge, such as rent, cannot be recovered from a former tenant unless the landlord serves the prescribed notice within 6 months of it falling due. And a former tenant who pays may call for an overriding lease. For a lease granted on or after January 1, 1996, the Landlord and Tenant Covenants Act 1995 changed it. On a lawful assignment of the whole, the tenant is released from the tenant covenants. Section 5. And here is the part people get wrong. That release is automatic. It requires nothing from anyone. So is an authorized guarantee agreement compulsory? No. The statute does not oblige the tenant to give one. It is a condition the landlord may impose under Section 16, where it is reasonable to do so. For a new commercial lease, the lease itself can provide for it under Section 19, 1A of the 1927 Act, and its reach is narrow. It guarantees the immediate buyer only, and only while the lease is vested in that buyer. Section 16, 4. Whether requiring one is reasonable turns on the facts. Against a buyer with strong accounts, a landlord may find it hard to insist. Then, the guarantor question, and it is a favorite. A company assigns, and its parent guaranteed the original lease. The landlord's draft wants the parent to guarantee the buyer for the rest of the term. Is that something the landlord can require? No. On a lawful assignment, the tenant is released, and its guarantor is released to the same extent. Section 24, 2. And Section 25 makes void any agreement to the extent that it would frustrate that release. A direct guarantee of the incoming tenant is exactly that, however freely negotiated. Good Harvest Partnership and Centaur Services. What the parent can lawfully be asked for is a sub-guarantee. A guarantee of its own subsidiary's obligations under the authorized guarantee agreement that subsidiary is giving. That backs the released tenant's own residual liability rather than the new tenant, so it frustrates nothing the Act provides. What actually goes in the license? The consent itself. Conditions: a guarantee where one can lawfully be required, a rent deposit, confirmation that there are no unremedied breaches. Direct covenants from the incoming tenant to the landlord to observe and perform the lease covenants, and execution as a deed by all parties. Why direct covenants when the lease binds the buyer anyway on the assignment? Because they give the landlord a second claim under the license on terms the landlord chose, which does not depend on the lease. And nobody is bound by a covenant in a deed it has not executed, which is why all three parties sign. The confirmation about breaches does quiet work. It fixes the state of the lease at the moment consent is given, so the buyer cannot later say it took the lease unaware. Find an unconsented alteration, and the answer is not to strike the clause out. It is to identify it and deal with it. Underletting now, and the first thing to understand is what it does not do. It does not release you. An underlease is a new and shorter estate carved out of your lease. You stay the landlord's tenant, liable on every covenant, including the rent, whether the undertenant pays or not. And you become the undertenant's landlord as well. Which brings the classic trap. 8 years left to run. The director wants the underlease drawn for the full 8 years, so that nothing is wasted. Can it be? No. An underlease must leave you a reversion, however short. Grant one for the whole residue, and you have granted away everything, so it takes effect as an assignment. Milmo and Carreras. 1 day is enough, and it would be an assignment made under a consent given only to an underletting, so a breach as well. Look up the chain, too. If your own landlord holds under a longer lease that forbids underletting without the freeholder's consent, its consent to you does not help. Its breach lets the freeholder forfeit the superior lease, and forfeiture destroys everything derived from it, including the underlease you have just granted. And where the clause imposes preconditions, they must be met in substance. In Allied Dunbar Assurance and Homebase, the proposed underlease reserved the required rent on its face, while a side deed between tenant and undertenant quietly undid it. The Court of Appeal held the landlord could refuse. You cannot dress up compliance. One more standard condition. A landlord may reasonably require the underlease to be contracted out of the security of tenure provisions before it is granted. Those are in Part 2 of the Landlord and Tenant Act, 1954. Otherwise, the undertenant could hold over and claim a renewal from a landlord that never chose it. Which brings us back to Friday. The license must be granted before the assignment completes. Correspondence agreeing terms is almost always subject to license, and agreement in substance is not consent. Complete first. And there are two costs. The lease is exposed to forfeiture, and a breach of an alienation covenant is treated as incapable of remedy. And under Section 11 of the Landlord and Tenant Covenants Act, 1995, an assignment in breach of covenant is an excluded assignment. The outgoing tenant gets no statutory release at all. It stays bound until the next lawful assignment in place of the limited guarantee exposure it had carefully negotiated. All to save a few days. A word on how this is tested. SQE1 will not ask you to recall a case name or a section number. You get a scenario, 5 answers, and 1 instruction. Pick the best. So, learn what the provisions do. The names are pegs to hang them on. If you keep only 3, the Landlord and Tenant Act, 1988, because it turns a vague duty into a timetable with the burden on the landlord. Sections 5 and 16 of the 1995 Act, because the release is automatic and the guarantee is optional. And Milmo and Carreras, because one day short is the difference between an underlease and an assignment. 4 traps. 1. The clock starts with a written application. Phone calls and site meetings, however many, engage nothing. A tenant that spends 4 months chasing informally and then serves the application has 4 months it cannot complain about. 2. A pre-1996 lease is a different world. The original tenant is bound for the whole term, for breaches by assignees it never chose, and only the landlord can release it. Check the date of grant before you tell anyone that assigning gives them a clean break. 3. Underletting keeps you in the chain. You remain directly liable for the rent whether or not the undertenant pays, and you take on the job of managing them. It is the route when assignment is not available, not the easier option. 4. A license works inside the lease and never enlarges it. It cannot authorize what the lease prohibits. If the covenant is absolute, no license granted under it will do. Only a variation will.
Quick check. A lease of a retail unit says the tenant may underlet part with the landlord's consent, such consent not to be unreasonably withheld. It also says the tenant shall not underlet the whole. The tenant has stopped trading and wants to underlet the entire unit to a single business. The landlord refuses and gives no reasons. The tenant points out that the landlord consented to an underletting of half the unit 2 years ago. 3 candidate answers. 1. No, because the landlord must give written reasons for refusing any application of this kind. 2. No, because the strength of the proposed undertenant makes the refusal unreasonable. 3. Yes, because underletting the whole is prohibited outright, so no question of reasonableness arises. Pause here if you want a moment. The answer is 3. The clause has 2 limbs and they are different kinds. Underletting part is qualified, permitted with consent, which cannot be unreasonably withheld. Underletting the whole is absolute. It is simply prohibited, and where a covenant is absolute, the tenant has no right to do the thing at all. So neither statute is engaged. Section 19, 1 of the Landlord and Tenant Act, 1927, implies the reasonableness proviso only into qualified covenants. And the duties in the 1988 Act arise
only on an application under such a covenant. The landlord may refuse for any reason or none. And the earlier consent was given under the other limb, so it commits the landlord to nothing. Five things to take away. 1. Read the alienation clause first. Absolute, qualified, or fully qualified decides whether reasonableness is even in play. 2. On a written application under a qualified covenant, the Landlord and Tenant Act, 1988, gives the tenant a reasonable time, written reasons, and the burden on the landlord. 3. For a lease granted on or after January 1, 1996, the release on a lawful assignment is automatic. An authorized guarantee agreement is what the landlord may require if reasonable, not what the statute demands. 4. An underlease for the whole residue is an assignment. 5. Get the license before you complete, or the release you are counting on never arrives. Next time, leasehold covenants. Practice this topic with exam-style questions at sqe1prep.co.uk. This episode is for education and exam revision only, not legal advice, and we are not affiliated with or endorsed by the SRA or Kaplan.